You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 64, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. And I am ready, folks. I am ready to do a show. I'm sitting here with my Batman-flavored Mountain Dew and ready to get crackin' here. We have a couple of issues to cover. No real news or anything. Now, I did actually finally get around this week to watching X-Men First Class. It should be no surprise to anybody out there that I have waited so long to see it. It's been on my Netflix queue for freaking ever. And I think finally now I've seen all of the more recent Marvel films. And I know that there were a lot of people out there who didn't really care for it. There's some things about the movie that I didn't really care for either. It's certainly not as good as The Avengers. But, you know, I didn't think it was that bad. There was nothing major about it that really bothered me. There were a few things that kind of irked me, but by and large, when you're going to do a prequel to a popular movie franchise, it usually sucks. And there's a pretty wide gulf that you have to jump over to really resonate with the big fans. And even though I don't think X-Men First Class succeeded on every level, I don't think it really failed on every level either. I didn't think it was all that bad. I think that, you know, they had some really cute stuff in there. There's a lot of fan service, of course, in the movie. They had a really cute cameo by Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Yeah, I missed the Stan cameo, so I think that ended up on the cutting room floor or something. But overall, I mean, it owed a lot to the Claremont Byrne run on X-Men, and to a much smaller degree, to the Grant Morrison run of X-Men, where they got their character, who they called the Angel, which didn't make any sense to me. But by and large, I didn't think it was that bad. So, you know, go check it out. X-Men First Class. It's been on DVD forever. I'm just really slow about getting to this stuff. Now, another announcement that I need to make here. I'm actually looking for people to help me out here with the show, as far as I need to put together some graphics for the show, like new banners and that sort of thing. I've been using the same banner since episode number one, and I've been trying to come up with ideas for stuff and not really having a lot of luck, and also not having a whole lot of time to work on stuff. So what I'd like to do is have a sort of contest. Now, I could do a contest, but let's be honest here. Not enough people are going to enter a contest. I mean, we have, you know, a good number of listeners to the show, but very few people actually getting involved or joining the Facebook page. And things are pretty quiet. So I know if I have a contest, then, you know, whoever submits anything is going to win. So what I'm just going to say is that if you'd like to submit something, whether it's a, you know, new opening theme would be interesting, a piece of, you know, art as a graphic or whatever, then I will give you some sort of perk, some sort of prize, whether it be an original sketch by me, yes, master extraordinaire artist here, or a guest host slot on the show. You're going to come on and co-host the show, you know, that sort of thing. If anybody wants any of that stuff, you know, please feel free to submit something to the show. And you know, unless it's really amateurish and awful, you know, then chances are, you know, you're going to get something for it. And it would be a big help to me if people can help out with the show. And I hate to beg. I really do. I hate to beg. Anyway, so yeah, and I have a third announcement. Now, the third announcement's no really big deal. But the third announcement is that with August and of course, onward into September and October, I'm going to be gone for a few weeks. Now, rather than actually do without a show, just be forewarned, there are going to be some short shows. I'm actually planning three short shows, maybe more than that. We'll see how the time thing runs out, because I've been thinking for a while, well, maybe I should do a shorter show. Maybe if I stay to a half an hour, people will be more excited about the show. Maybe people will look more forward to some of the issues. And of course, we're getting to a point now where, you know, we're getting into more sort of in between eras. You know, we're actually getting towards the end of the Simonson run, folks. I know that's kind of frightening to think of because that stuff is really popular and I love that stuff. But we actually are starting out this episode with the first of the Simonson issues that Walt Simonson doesn't actually draw. And so that is the beginning of sort of the winding down of the Simonson era. Now, we are going to do, of course, a Lee Kirby issue first from 1968. But just be forewarned, there are some short shows that are coming, and that's because I'm planning a vacation. And what I'm planning on doing is posting them before I leave, and they will sort of go up on the feed automatically, and you won't have to worry about it. Yeah, so you won't miss anything while I'm gone. It'll seem as though I'm not even gone, hopefully. Anyway, all right. So let's get on with it. We got a couple issues to cover, so let's move on with our reviews.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed. I just have to take a little sip here of my Batman-flavored Mountain Dew. Yeah, I kind of like some of these wonky new Mountain Dew flavors. Not that I want to talk about Mountain Dew for any length of time, because this show is not being sponsored by Mountain Dew. If they want to give me money to advertise them, I will happily do so. I do like this Dark Berry. Anyway, so the first issue we'll be covering this episode is Thor number 148, has a cover date of January of 1968, retail for 12 cents. Cover art is by Jack Kirby and Vinnie Coletta. They'll have to tell you, I had my doubts about this, and I actually went to Mike's Amazing World of Marvel Comics and looked this up, because this doesn't look like Coletta inks on this. But that's what, you know, Mike's Amazing World, you know, they generally are right spot on with this. So they say it's Coletta, so I'm going to kind of accept that it's Coletta. Though I will tell you, it looks far more like the Bill Everett inks that we had a few episodes ago than it does like anything Coletta. Anyway, we see on the cover, we have in the foreground Thor and Baldur and the Lady Sif. And we see the backs of them, actually. They're in the foreground, and right in front of them, kind of standing up on a broken-down wall, is this guy in purple and green costume, so you know he's evil. And he's got this big gold crowbar-looking thing over his head, and we have the cover blurb here. It says, "Introducing the pounding power of the Wrecker." Oh, yeah, the Wrecker. And we open up to the splash page where we have the credits. Stan and Man Lee and Jack King Kirby produced this issue with Vince Coletta on inks, and Sam Rosen is the letterer. And we have a warning here. Warning. Prolonged reading of this publication may be injurious to our competitors. Oh, yes. And the title of the story, Let There Be Chaos. And this issue picks up right where we left off last time, where Thor and Sif and Baldur and Loki are standing here. And if you remember, Odin left Thor powerless on Earth. So Loki, of course, trying to take advantage of the fact that Thor was relatively powerless, goes to attack him. And as they're fighting, Sif and Baldur show up to rescue Thor. And at this moment, there's a big green amount of Kirby crackle surrounding the three Asgardians that are not Thor. And, you know, they kind of all fall down. And Loki says, "We've been struck by an all-powerful Odin bolt." "It can only mean one thing," says Baldur. "Let all be silent. The skies grow dark. The very heavens tremble. The Omnipotent One makes ready to be heard." And Sif's like, "Look in the sky." And you see the eyes of Odin taking shape over the city and hear him speaking. He says, "Hear thou the words of Odin. Hear thou the words of him who is most sorely displeased. Thou have dared to disobey mine orders imperial. I have forbade thy visit to Earth, and yet there before mine eyes thou do stand on the planet of mortals. If with mortals thou wouldst dwell, as powerless as they thou shalt be. I have spoken, so be it." And there's a big red flash, and Loki, Baldur, and Sif have also lost their Asgardian powers. And Thor is like, "Now, Loki, thou hast lost thy power, even as I have lost mine.
Thus, when we continue battle, we meet on equal terms. And Loki's not too keen to battle Thor at this point. He's like, not so, accursed one. There shall be no battle. And he's thinking to himself, at least not yet. With our godlike power gone, 'tis you who are the strongest. For your own natural strength is the greatest of all. But not for long shall the advantage be yours. Thor's like, I'm not afraid of you. And Loki's like, I do more than threaten. Whoever first regains his enchanted power shall be the victor. And that one shall be, must be, Loki. And Thor's like, well, okay, well, maybe I should destroy you now. But Loki goes running away, and Thor has too much honor to go chasing after somebody who's running away from him. And Sif is kind of comforting Thor here, but she also wants Thor to go after him. Though he's lost his enchanted powers, he is still the most menacing, the most dangerous of all who live. I say he must be pursued.
Thor says thee nay. Baldur hath no fear of cunning Loki.
Yes, like Baldur's trying to show up Thor here. And we then shift scenes to a penthouse, and rich old man and rich old lady are returning from the opera, and they find their butler tied to a pillar.
He's like, good heavens, the penthouse has been burgled while we were at the opera. Poor Mayhew, I'll have you untied in a moment, my dear fellow.
Oh, the place is in shambles. Who could have done it? Oh, my jewels, they're gone, and all of your bonds as well.
And the old man has untied the butler. The butler is like as fat as Volstagg, which is...
It's like, I saw him, sir. He was powerful, merciless, mocking. He called himself the Wrecker.
And the rich old man is here on the telephone calling the police.
No, not just any policeman. I want the commissioner, and I want him now. I've just been robbed by the Wrecker.
And we then cut to the police station where we have the police commissioner. I guess he doesn't look like Commissioner Gordon, because I was going to make some sort of Commissioner Gordon joke, but he really doesn't look like that. Anyway, it's like, the Wrecker again?
Yes, sir, we'll put every available man on it. The Wrecker gets more daring with every job, and he keeps slipping through our traps like a greased pig. There's no doubt about it, the man's a menace. He's slippery as an eel, and he's afraid of nothing.
There's one thing on our side anyway. At least he hasn't any special superhuman powers like some others who've plagued us in the past. Imagine how disastrous it would be if he did.
And the police go out looking for the Wrecker, and they're searching rooftops of the nearby buildings, but they're not having a lot of luck finding him. They don't see him, and he's actually tucked beneath, like, one of these decorative overhangs on one of these buildings. Looks very, almost Art Deco, which is actually pretty impressive, because you don't think of Jack Kirby as actually copying any kind of classic architecture style. He just kind of draws what he draws. And he's hiding underneath this overhang, and the police don't see him. But he's standing there, and he's waiting for them to leave. He says,
they're gone. They move so fast, I had to drop all the loot I was carrying. Well, at least the Wrecker got away scot-free. Now all I gotta do is find another victim.
And then we shift scenes again to the doctor's office of Dr. Don Blake. And there's a delivery man delivering lunch to Dr. Blake's office. And he's thinking, boy, this is a pretty big lunch order for just one guy.
It's the second door on your left, is the elevator operator telling.
I know. I've been here plenty of times before.
And he's thinking, I thought Dr. Blake was out of town. I wonder when he got back. I used to dig that groovy nurse of his. I kind of like the doc, too. Ooh la la. Because he was always a big tipper.
Oh, my. And Thor opens the door and says,
ah, 'tis a stripling who doth bring our viands. I bid thee enter, lad. Be not alarmed. We mean thee no harm.
And he's like, what?
And he sees Thor and Sif and Baldur there, and they take the food away from him. And Baldur's like,
ah, whether in the Elysian fields of Asgard or the Halcyon halls of Earth, how good it is to quell the pangs of hunger.
If only the ache of exile could be as easily erased.
I beg thee, fair one, let thee not fall prey to melancholy.
What's going on here? Are they making some kind of movie?
Whether the answer be so truly simple, says Thor. I trust that the now absent Dr. Blake will not take some umbrage at the removal of some paper currency from his wallet.
Yeah, it's like he has to describe what he's doing because it's comics.
Huh? You really are the God of Thunder. You're mighty Thor.
Aye, perhaps not so mighty as in days gone by, but in truth, 'tis Thor who now bids thee farewell.
How am I going to make him believe this in the Java joint? How?
They shall look in thine eyes and believe.
And he pushes the delivery guy out the door. It's very convenient that Don Blake has left a wallet full of money just laying around where Thor can get it. Because you got to get the idea that when Thor changed into... Well, I should say when Don Blake changes into Thor, his clothes change too, and the wallet is just kind of not there. But that's one of those things, like what happens to Billy Batson's wallet when he changes into Captain Marvel? You know, they don't really explain stuff like that. So the three of them are there in Dr. Blake's office, and they're eating their food, and they're feeling sorry for themselves. And yeah, they're kind of wondering what to do. And Baldur's like, still idle like this is not for the likes of me. And Sif is like, she who hath once been a goddess now echoes thy sentiments, brave one. And Thor's like, the heart of Thor is truly heavy. 'Twas in my behalf the both of thee did incur the wrath of Odin. Ne'er did god nor man have greater friends. And one there is who doth be more than friend. But the time is out of joint. 'Tis not now the moment to dwell upon such matters of the heart. And Sif is thinking, you know, typical Stanley written woman at the time. Ah, my prince, my own true love, the lips of Sif are ever ready to speak of love. And Thor's like, from the ashes of despair must ever bloom the seed of hope. Let us not bemoan our fate. A brave new world doth stretch before us. 'Tis here we shall find our destiny. Wherever thou art, most noble Thor, there is the destiny of Sif. And we shift scenes, and we find Loki, and remember Loki had disguised himself as an earthling, and he's got a rented room now. So basically Loki has found a cheap apartment. Looks like it's already been furnished, so I can imagine Loki going out shopping for furniture for his apartment. And he's saying out loud, ha, not for long shall I be without my mystic powers. All I need to do is summon my sister in evil. For many are the favors owed Loki by the supremely sinister Norn Queen. Now, see, it's really odd to think of Carnilla as being a bad guy, isn't it? Because we've actually seen her in the Baldur the Brave miniseries and in the Thor series. And, you know, it seems like she's not so bad. But here, this is the era where she's still really a villain. So, many times she hath dared with Loki to defy the will of Odin. Though her power is not so great as his, it will enable me to be many times the superior of Thor and of those who do befriend him. But hold, what do I hear? A sound from outside my window. Fie, what is happening to me? Shall the deadly Loki fall prey to a fear of shadows? Enough, let me return to my mystic task. And so, even though he doesn't have any powers, he's using his powers? So this doesn't make a lot of sense. This is, I think, kind of sloppy. And he's like, hear me, Queen of the Norns, 'tis Loki who summons thee. Thou must grant me power enow to vanquish all who oppose my will. And it's the Wrecker outside his window, and that's who he's kind of seeing skulking around. And the Wrecker's like, I don't know who he is, but with a costume like that, he might have just pulled a job himself. So I'll just smash my way in and hijack his loot. And Loki's like, it is done. And now, what was that? And the wall comes bursting in here. And it's the Wrecker and kind of smashing his way in through the wall. Stay where you are, mister, and you won't get hurt. All I want from you is your loot. Now, he should know because, you know, Loki is wearing green that he's evil too. But, yeah, I guess they don't know that. An intruder? Actually daring to threaten me? Fool, I'll crush you like a flea. Okay, pal. Don't say I didn't warn ya. I can handle this crowbar better than a surgeon can handle his scalpel. I can crease the dome of a fly at 100 yards. I'll just dust ye enough to keep ye quiet till I'm done. And he knocks out Loki with his crowbar. So cool. And they says, hey, I thought there'd be something special in this container, but it's some kind of nutty helmet. So yeah, so Loki has taken his helmet with the big horns on it and threw it in a hat box so as to be non-conspicuous, I suppose. It's like the one that muscle-bound Thunder God wears. The way he had it wrapped up, it must be worth plenty. I always wanted to try out one of these things. And he puts the helmet on, and as the Wrecker puts the helmet on, Carnilla appears behind him in a big burst of red Kirby crackle. He's like, God of evil, thy summons is answered. And turns around and, you know, she doesn't see his face very well because of the Kirby crackle, I guess. And so she thinks that the Wrecker is Loki. That which you request shall be thine. So be it. And she casts a spell on the Wrecker and then she vanishes. And as she disappears into a red Cthulhu, basically.
Use thine evil powers well, cunning Loki, and now my debt is paid.
So the Wrecker is like, whoever she was, she's gone. She must have thought I was that other guy, the one she called Loki. I don't know what she did to me, but I like it. Oh my. I feel like a blasted powerhouse. And you can see that the Wrecker's gotten bigger and more muscular, and you know, he's kind of got this pink energy crackling around him. And at this point, Loki starts to regain consciousness, and the Wrecker's like, well, well, look who's waking up. And Loki's like, my helmet, you dare to hold it? It cannot be. It is mine alone. Don't get your tonsils in an uproar, sonny. Here, take it. It didn't fit me so good anyway. All the Wrecker needs is his crowbar. And Loki's like, ha, now you shall get more than you need. Now you'll learn the fate of any mortal who dares strike the god of evil. But the Wreckers manages to, he kind of waves his hand and shoots an energy bolt at Loki, and Loki can't progress, can't get to the Wrecker, and says, I can go no further. You hold me back with but a gesture. I don't know how this works, but I sure ain't knocking it. It must have something to do with what that chick said. Let's see what else I can handle. I order you to get back to where you came from, Fink. And there's a big puff of smoke, and Loki is gone. And the Wrecker laughs. He's like, it worked. The clown is gone. That's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Instead of just stealing a whole bunch of loot, I stole some kind of magic power. I latched onto something supernatural, and I like it.
And then we cut back to the office of Dr. Blake, or at least, I don't know if it's still his office or his apartment or what. Anyway, Thor and Baldur and Sif are sitting there watching TV, and it looks like Spider-Man's on TV. Thor's saying, there are many customs of Earth for thee to learn. And Sif points out that the TV is a lot like Odin's cosmic voyeuroscope. And that's I guess that's true in a way. Baldur says it seems miraculous, but he's perplexed at what purpose it serves. And Thor says, 'tis known to mortals as entertainment. And Baldur's like, bah, the sight of the Valkyrie riding across the heavens, the sound of sword clashing against naked steel, the beauty of a celestial sunset, that is entertainment.
That is because we still consider ourselves as guardians. But in truth, we are as guardians no more.
And as she says that, there's a special news bulletin on the TV. And Thor says, hold, what have we here? And there's a news story about the Wrecker. And there's one man rampage across the city. And they report that he seems to possess the enchanted power of Asgard. So how would they know that? Anyway, it's a weakness in the scripting. But Baldur's like, how can an earthling have obtained the power of Asgard? 'Tis most impossible, unless... Thor's like, aye, the selfsame thought did cross my mind.
It can only be the doing of Loki.
And Thor's like, we must hasten to the spot. Despite their courage, despite their skill, no mortal law officers can cope with Asgardian power. Though our own enchanted power be gone, still we have the knowledge and the strength. And the three of them go running off towards where the Wrecker is at. And we see that he's being attacked by the police. And they're shooting at him with their guns. And they're like, it's no use. He keeps repelling our bullets with some sort of force waves.
No weapon can harm the Wrecker.
It's like trying to hit a ghost. You're surrounded. You can't escape.
Escape? You fools. You still don't understand. It's you who are trapped by the Wrecker. Watch how my own enchanted powers can make a supreme weapon out of this ordinary crowbar. And he drives his crowbar into the wall and with a thock.
And he, you know, just levers out like a whole corner of the building, goes batoom and crashes down. He says,
now I'm simply wrecking an old abandoned tenement. Think what I could do to any building in the city anytime I want. This is just a sample to show you what you're up against if you try to stop the Wrecker.
All right, men. Let's show him what...
No, hold it, stay back! And they're like, what's wrong, Captain?
He says, nothing's wrong. I just noticed someone on the roof, behind the Wrecker.
And the Wrecker's like, I bet I can split the whole planet apart. And we hear the voice of Thor. Not while Thor and his comrades do live. Put down thy weapon. And he doesn't, obviously, because he's the Wrecker. And Thor lunges forward. He says, so, thou dost choose to disregard the word of Thor.
I'll do more than disregard you, mister. I'll show you how helpless you are against me.
And he causes a, you know, kind of waves his hand and uses a gesture and tries to block him there like he did with Loki.
Okay, Longhair, just you stay there while I take care of the other two behind you. I'll get rid of them, just like I got rid of the one who called himself Loki. Get back, both of you. Back to where you came from. Presumably to Asgard, I would think, anyway. And Thor's like, Baldur, my lady Sif, they are gone. Truly, thou do possess the power of Asgard.
You know it, Goldilocks. That chick who called herself the Norn Queen was the real McCoy. And now I'll let you move again. I want to enjoy watching you when you see there's nothing you can do to save yourself.
And Thor is set free. And we get a beautiful full-page panel here of the Wrecker. And he's lunging at Thor with his crowbar. And Thor's dodging it. Thor's like thinking to himself, his confidence would seem to be most justified. Even mighty Thor, possessed of strength immeasurable, can be no match for one with the power of enchantment at his command. And yet, fight him I must. For so long as life endures, let valor be the prod and hope the spur. And we change to the next page, and the two of them are going at it, and the Wrecker's bashing at Thor, and Thor's managing to deflect the Wrecker's crowbar with his hammer, and they get sound effects, batang, and they're kind of fighting each other, pretty evenly matched here, and fatam, and brack, and the Wrecker's smashing the wall behind Thor, and Thor's managing to dodge, for the most part, and Thor notes that the enchanted power that the Norn Queen gave him is protecting him from Thor's blows, but Thor doesn't have any kind of protection like that, so he needs to dodge. And Thor is thinking that he can't yield, so he's just going to keep fighting. And he does this sort of judo flip thing and is trying to throw the Wrecker over the side of the building. Because he realizes that if Thor fails, then it's going to be the Wrecker against the entire human race. And pitches the Wrecker over the side of the building, but the Wrecker manages to hold on to him and drags Thor down with him. And they break through the roof of the building next door with a giant thrapok. And the Wrecker's like, ha, I did it. I got the upper hand at last. All those muscles of yours ain't going to help you now, Longhair. Because they can't do a thing against the enchantment I'm going to use right now in order to finish you off forever. And we then, at that moment, cut back to Asgard. And Baldur and Sif are back in Asgard, like I had surmised. And Odin is there, and he's like, so, thou art returned. Still I be concerned with weightier matters. And Baldur's like, but the God of Thunder is in danger most grave. Be thou silent. There be no God of Thunder. For he who was is Thunder God no longer. But 'tis thy son of whom thou speakest. Stripped of his power, he is in mortal peril. If thou wilt permit him to perish, then may the All-Father forgive me. Baldur shall renounce his sword forever. Try not the patience of a vengeful Odin. I'll hear no more. Thus let thee both be gone. And I guess they do be gone. And Odin has his back turned to them, and he says,
my son hath erred. He must pay his penance. Whatever the danger, I shall not intrude. So be it.
And we have next issue's blurb, When Falls a Hero. And that is Thor number 148. And great stuff there in this issue. We're really starting off 1968 with a bang with the introduction of the Wrecker. And this is a character that, you know, even before he got the Norn Queen's magic, and I love the way that they have the Norn Queen accidentally enchant him rather than enchant Loki because the Wrecker is wearing his helmet. I mean, that is such a Silver Age sort of plot device, but at the same time, I really like it. And yeah, the Wrecker, of course, sticks around for a lot of years in the Marvel Universe, and he's a second-tier villain at best. But you know what? At least he's not as lame as Mr. Hyde. You know what I'm saying? Artwork, generally speaking, really, really good. And even the inks look pretty good on this. Really enjoying that. And there's a couple pages that really stand out here. We have some really nice composition here, like Kirby on the cover. And there's a lot going on in the issue. I mean, we have this really long scene with the delivery boy, which really is rather irrelevant, but it goes on for almost a page. Now, one of the things that I kind of wonder, you know, we have Loki here, and he gets an apartment on really short notice, and it just happens to be in the same building that the Wrecker is hiding on. You know, it's those sort of Silver Age contrived plot devices that kind of give me fits. But at the same time, you know, there's still some great stuff in here. And you get the fact that Thor and the others are watching television. And that's how they find out about the Wrecker. Because, you know, in Marvel Universe, TV is instant. You don't have to actually send a camera crew. You know, just anything important is automatically on whatever channel you're watching. And that's one of those very convenient things about the Marvel Universe. I kind of wish they could have that here, though I suppose that with the 24-hour news cycle, we're a lot closer now than they were back in the 1960s. Is it just me or Odin being even more of a dick than usual? I know I talked about this in a prior episode. I think something has happened to Odin. And I'm not reading ahead at this point. A lot of these issues, this is my first time through them as well. So it's really, really kind of interesting to follow this plot device. I will say that Kirby's doing a real good job in this issue of not making Odin look like Santa Claus, which, as you know, is one of my pet peeves about anybody drawing Odin. And that will be it for Thor number 148. I could mention the Inhuman story. It has gorgeous art by Jack Kirby and Joe Sinnott, and it has the origin of Black Bolt. And it has Black Bolt as a baby kind of destroying everything, so that's pretty cool. But my favorite quote out of this whole story is, "Hurry, in the name of evolution, hurry!" I think I'm going to start using that in everyday conversation. All right, so without further ado, let's move on to the next issue that we'll be covering in this episode. And that is The Mighty Thor number 368. It has a cover date of June of 1986. Retail for 75 cents. Cover art is by Walt Simonson, though he didn't do the interior. We'll be talking about that in a second. And we have Baldur the Brave here on the cover, and he's in some sort of an arena, and he's going up against this big rock giant looking thing. And the giant has a big spiky mace and a big horned helmet and purple bikini briefs and sandals, which that goes really well with his bikini briefs. And tied to a large green phallic symbol in the background are three beautiful women, a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead. And we have sort of this ghostly image of bearded Thor looking over the bunch of them. And the cover blurb says, "The Fate of Baldur." But wait, I thought Baldur died last issue. Something is amiss here. Turn to the splash page where we have the credits. Writing is by Walt Simonson. Penciling and inking is by Sal Buscema. Lettering by John Workman. Coloring by Max Scheel. Editing by Ralph Macchio. And the editor-in-chief is Jim Shooter. Now, hey, I hate to admit it, folks, but we have seen the last of Walt Simonson penciling Thor, at least on a full-time basis. And this was where Sal Buscema takes over the pencils. And to me, this sort of signifies really the last of the really good Walt Simonson Thor. And I hate to say that because, you know, the stuff is hugely popular and I love it. And there's so much of it is so good. And here, to me, was one of the eras when I started to lose interest in the book again. Because for me, you know, the artwork has always been a huge thing. And so here as well. But of course, we are going to go through it. And for a lot of this stuff, this is the first time I'm going to look at it since 1986. So maybe it'll stand up for me better now than it did back then. So we pick up the story where we left off last issue, where Curse has kind of erupted from beneath the stage during Baldur's coronation and apparently snapped his neck. And of course, we have the title of the story is called The Eye of the Beholder. And Agnar is here, and he said, "It cannot be! Baldur the Brave hath been slain by Curse!" And everyone looks really alarmed, except for Baldur, who looks like, his neck is broken. And Curse is just sitting there, not doing anything at all. And Agnar is coming and rushing up with a sword, saying, "The villain shall not outlive thee, my prince! Agnar of Vanaheim will avenge thy death for Baldur the Brave!" And Thor kind of goes forward and holds Agnar back from attacking, and says, "Hold, Agnar! Thor bids thee stay thy wrath. My lord, Baldur's dead. Yonder kneels his assassin. Let justice be done." "Hold thyself in check. I command it." Wait a minute. Who's king here? "There is more here than meets the eye. I have fought this selfsame Curse before. He is no wanton assassin, slaying for pay or for pleasure. Rather, he is a mad vessel of revenge, seeking a single goal." Yeah, it's good that he remembered that. "His power is truly beyond belief. But Baldur was not the object of his hatred. I wonder. Agnar, take thy blade and touch the body of our fallen brother." And Agnar's like, "My lord." He said, "Just do it." And Agnar touches his blade to Baldur. And the body glows really brightly. And you hear a sound effect. That's how it reads. And the body transmogrifies. And is no longer Baldur the Brave lying there. But instead, the villainous Malekith. And Agnar's like, "Upon my life, This is not our fair Balder. This is none other than Malekith, the shape-changer, who we did capture only yesterday. And Thor's like, as I suspected, iron has ever destroyed elvish enchantment, and thy sword has broken Malekith's spell. The dark elf escaped our prison only to deceive us in Balder's guise. Who knows what harm he would have wrought upon Asgard if he had lived? But even his magical disguise could not deceive Curse, whom he once did wrong. And now he hath paid the full price for his crimes. And everyone's kind of really happy about that. And Volstagg and the Warriors Three and Agnar are there. Volstagg is,
all well and good, Thor, but what of the real Balder?
Indeed, the blade of Fandral cries out to learn the answer to this riddle. And Agnar's like, yes, where's Balder? And Heimdall comes up and says, Thor, I wish to learn the fate of Balder as much as any, but what of Curse? If he is truly as powerful as you have said, what prison will hold him? And Thor's like, none in Asgard, Heimdall, but I think that will not be necessary. With Malekith's death, the driving force behind Curse's will seems to have died as well. And were it not for him, we would not even know now that we are paying homage to one of Asgard's bitterest foes. And Thor says, Agnar, I must ask a difficult task of thee. Upon my oath, I shall not rest until I have found Balder and brought him home to Asgard. And Agnar's like, yeah, I'm in. I'll help you out. I think Agnar has a bit of a man crush on Balder. And he says, that is the task I set thee, Agnar. While I and my chosen companions ride forth in search of the Shining God, I would ask that you remain behind. And Agnar's like, huh? Though he be quiet, Curse's power can shake the very foundations of the Nine Worlds. But you carry the Sword of Fry, which can cut any substance. Therefore, I ask you to go with Heimdall and guard Curse, lest his fury be rekindled. And Agnar's like, I don't know about this, but Heimdall and the two of them are guiding Curse away and just kind of wandering off. I like how Thor kind of goes, hey, Agnar, you know, you're the new guy, so you need to guard this really, really dangerous dude. And Thor's thinking Agnar's a good guy, and eventually he'll be a really good warrior, but not right now. He's just a little bit too brash. I guess he figures since he was taught his great lesson by having Volstagg sit on him for 3 issues, then that being destroyed by Curse will teach him a lesson too. And he's hoping that Heimdall can give him some guidance. And then Thor calls the Warriors Three to his side, and they go to inspect the prison cell where Malekith was being held. And they go running down this windy stairway. Volstagg is bringing up the rear, and he says, guard them against any unwanted intruders. And they see that the cell door has been, you know, broken open. And you know, they're saying, yeah, this probably isn't the work of Malekith, you know, because he doesn't have that kind of a strength. And they see that the prisoner is actually still inside the cell and still chained up. And the prisoner happens to be Loki. And Thor's like, how came you to this pass? And did you have some hand in Balder's disappearance, perhaps? Did you and Malekith have a falling out? And Loki's like, always perceptive, my dear stepbrother. Ever ready to lay the blame at Loki's door, though he sits before you in chains and tatters. Use what few brains you are given. I am as much a victim of Malekith's tricks as you. He took me by surprise and cast a spell to give me his appearance. So while I languished here alone, he walked around Asgard with impunity. Then that creature Curse burst forth from the ground, thinking I was Malekith, and he would have slain me. But at the last moment, something told him that I was not the foe he thought, and he turned and broke his way out of the cell, as though it were made of paper. Your presence here, I take it, means that Curse succeeded, and Malekith is no more. Good riddance, and goodbye, and Loki waves his hands and disappears in a poof, and Fandral is like, Thor! For some, I don't know why he said that, but so Thor's like, the devious one has departed, Fandral, for home, most likely, though I do not trust him. At least part of his story was true. Curse was certainly here. And I expect that Malekith did out-trick the trickster. For that alone, it may have been worth the Dark Elf's visit. Loki is never so sour as when he has been outmaneuvered. There's nothing further to be learned here. 'Tis time we began our search for noble Balder. So then they show Thor and the Warriors Three, and they've mounted up on their horseback, and they're driving off towards Nornheim and backtracking along the route that Balder most likely would have taken. And they come to a place in the road where the road splits 4 ways. And so they decide they're going to each take one of these ways. And Volstagg chooses to go off to the right because he knows there's an inn down the road where he might be able to, quote unquote, get some information concerning wayfarers and such. Thor decides to take the left-hand route. And the other two take the other 2 routes. They don't really say which. We then cut back to Earth and a prison. So we have, you know, guards and, of course, the prison walls. And it looks like they're letting go somebody, letting an inmate go free, served his sentence and is going home. The warden is there. It's like a movie scene, you know, the classic, you know, letting the thug out of prison thing. And the warden's like, "So long, Thatcher. Remember what I told you and keep your nose clean. I don't want you here again." And the caption says, "The warden needn't worry, he'll never see Thug Thatcher again." Huh, Thug Thatcher. Now, where have I heard that before? Well, it turns out that we have seen Thug Thatcher before, and I think that was all the way back, Radio Free Asgard, around episode number 6, because Thug Thatcher originally appeared back in Journey into Mystery number 89. Those of you who have been listening to the show since the beginning will go back and remember Thug Thatcher was this mobster who ended up getting shot, and they ended up taking him to Don Blake because they wanted somebody to remove the bullet, and he ended up kidnapping Jane Foster, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, it was a rather uninteresting story, and like a lot of these really early Marvel stories, was rather uneven. But on the other hand, Walt Simonson found fit to bring this character back and actually try to do something with him. So, yeah, let it never be said that continuity is without meaning at Marvel, particularly in the 1980s. So we have this guy, and he looks older than in his last appearance. He's like, "All these years, all those crummy years in that crummy hole, and it was you, Thor. If it hadn't been for you, I'd never seen Riker's Island. I'll bet you don't even remember me now, but I haven't forgotten. When I'm through, you'll never forget me either." And he hails a cab and heads his way to Kennedy Airport. And you see a plane taking off, and apparently Thug Thatcher's going on a little vacation. We then cut back to Thor, and he's on the road between Asgard and Nornheim, and he's riding through this area of little mountains, and there's these gnarled old trees, which are probably in great danger now because Thor is there. And he's like, "The day draws to a close, and still no sign of Baldur, Widowwind." Widowwind, I guess, is the name of his horse. "We'll stop for the night and resume our search in the light of morning." And he leans up against this tree, and horse is eating the grass and getting ready to go to sleep. And then he hears a voice.
"Then, my lord Thor, you have not come to save the ladies?"
Thor's like, "What?"
"Why, old granny thought you'd come to save the noble ladies held captive by Slagenbeer the troll."
"What ladies, granny? 'Tis not a tale I've heard in Asgard." And he seems amused by this.
"Perhaps because none who dares the castle ever comes out again."
Thor's like, "Where's this place?"
"A mile down the road, you'll find a path that leads off through the brambles to the right. Follow the scarlet flowers and you'll come to a hidden way. Follow the way and you'll find the castle. Old granny's no liar, son of Odin."
And he's like, "How do you know me?" And that's kind of a dumb question because he's Thor and everyone knows him. And that's kind of what she says.
"Old granny is no fool either, lord. Everyone knows the son of Odin."
I suppose that just goes to show that what David Byrne said back in the 1980s still rings true today. If you wear the same clothes all the time, people are going to know who you are. "Very well, granny. In the morning, before I resume my travels, I'll have a look at the castle of Slagenbeer." And we see on the next page, Thor's woken up, and he's followed this trail of, well, they look like roses, and they're growing right out of the rock, so you know they're some sort of magic. And he rides the horse right up to the edge of a cliff, and there's this giant castle, and he's like, "The way was longer than I would have thought, but 'tis well that I decided to investigate this path. Certainly I would not have noticed it had the old peddler woman not spoken to me. And now that I see what I found, not a sound, not a breath of wind disturbs the late afternoon stillness. And yet, by my enchanted hammer, what's this?" And he finds this enormous skeleton with a big horned helmet. He's like, "The skeleton of a large troll, I judge. Picked clean by the scavengers, but recent all the same. Perhaps these are the bones of Slagenbeer himself, but there's no sign of any other living being about, and no sign of Baldur, or the captive maidens Granny spoke of. Nor is there any challenge to my presence from the floating fortress." So, I guess this castle is supposed to be floating on a cloud, and it just, to me, doesn't really look like it's floating on the cloud. It looks like it's just kind of surrounded in mist. But anyway, "The castle and valley reek of sorcery and illusion. It does not seem likely that Baldur strayed this way off the path to Asgard. I'd best return to the main road and continue to Nornheim. Perhaps even now one of the warriors three has found some trace of our comrade. And Thor's about to turn around, but he sees a glimmer. So some in the grass, there's a glint like a jewel, which is kind of what it is. And decides to go investigate, have a look. And then we cut back to Loki's castle, which, as you remember, is on this big, tall spire of rock. And there's this windy Dr. Seussian path leading up to it. You hear a chant, and this basically is Lorelei, and she's singing to Loki, and he's telling her the story of what happened to him, and she's like, "Oh, Loki, I'm so glad you're home. I didn't know what had happened to you. Wait until you hear what that creature Sif did to..." He's like, "Lorelei, please. Much has happened during my stay in the prison of no escape, and most of it is far more important than anything the Lady Sif could conceivably have done to anybody. I am still not clear about how I came to occupy a cell in Asgard's prisons. But the most important question of all is this. Namely, what has become of Baldur?" And he conjures up in his cosmic voyeuroscope / crystal ball / Eye of Agamotto, which is kind of what it looks like, an image of Baldur. And he says, "And if the mystic vapors of Urd serve me well, then we shall soon know the answer." And so he's scrying and he's spying on Baldur. And he sees Baldur riding on his horse, and he's kind of riding along. And he's riding past the same area where Thor was. And he sees the gnarled old tree and the old woman, and says,
"My lord Baldur, has the deliverer of the ladies come at last?" And basically she gave him the same spiel that she gave to Thor.
And basically Baldur's like, "Well, how do you know me?" And he's like,
"Old Granny's no fool either, lord. Everyone knows the Shining One, who shall soon be the ruler of Asgard."
And Baldur's like, "Well, I guess I should go save the ladies, because it shall never be said that Baldur forsook the helpless in distress." And he goes to have a look at the castle of Slagenbeer, and the old lady looks very, very pleased by that. So we see Baldur riding up the path, following the crimson roses that line the roadway. And he says, "I should ride hard for Asgard, where my duty calls me. But before I take on the responsibility of high office, Baldur will enjoy one final adventure. After all, when I hold the golden scepter, a folly such as this will be denied me. For what king can set aside his heavy burden and be again a simple freeman of the Dale, even for a moment? The path of flowers shows no sign of ending, yet I have traveled the better part of a day. Is it possible that that old peddler..." But wait, and he sees the floating castle. In this panel, it really does look like it's floating on a cloud. "That can only be the stronghold of Slagenbeer. And formidable it is, too, hinting of puissant magic. Below it, no grass grows, and the path of flowers stops, whoever he may be. Slagenbeer is certainly a powerful wizard. I doubt this is truly wise, for the silence tells me that even the animals shun this place. But I told Carnilla once that she would love me less if I did not ride to a splendid doom. And this is but a smallish castle. Surely no foeman lurking within can daunt the warrior who defeated the giants in Jotunheim in their own realm." Which is, of course, a reference back to the Baldur the Brave miniseries. And it looks like Slagenbeer is expecting visitors. And there's a rope ladder kind of coming down from the castle. And he's like, "It matters not. Baldur the Brave is a match for any troll." And even though the ladder is pretty up high, Baldur leaps off of his horse, directly off the horse, which has got to be some kind of a trick. And it grabs onto the bottom rung of the ladder and climbs his way up to the castle. And he's thinking, "You know, Asgard can wait a moment longer. The ground vanishes beneath me through the clouds. And perhaps the strange perspective hath played me a trick. This castle does not seem so small when seen from its own front gate. Truly the lord of this Eyrie hath made himself a home above the world, if any lord there is. The structure seems deserted." This castle actually looks a whole lot like the Ice Giant castle that we saw in the Baldur the Brave miniseries. So he's in the castle, and looking around, and hears a voice. Sounds a lot like Jane Foster. He's like,
"At last, a champion who can save us! Kasi, look below into the courtyard!"
"It cannot be, Un. 'Tis some trick of the demon to torture us anew."
"Courage, Kasi. Brave warrior, help us. We beseech thee. Save us from the wicked power of Slagenbeer. Or are you, as Kasi fears, only another vision sent to break our spirits and cast us into despair?"
"Hear me, damsels. Baldur the Brave is no vision. The blood within me fairly burns at the sight of thy helpless plight." He just likes seeing women tied up. And this one woman, the blonde, she looks like she's dressed as Saturn Girl. She really does. The pink bikini costume.
and I swear upon my sacred oath that I will right this wrong. Come forth, foul Sligenbeer! Who are you that you should use these ladies so cruelly? Come forth from the shadows, if you dare. And he waits around, and something dark comes out of the darkness and comes toward him. And it's a giant, and it's the giant that we saw on the cover, except he's not wearing purple. He's wearing the sort of bluish color. But he's a big giant guy with his kind of tusks, and he's got a big spiky mace like he did on the cover. And he's coming after Balder, and he's like, it is a troll, the size of a small giant. Welcome, Balder, to the Citadel of Sligenbeer. And he smashes the ground, and Balder manages to dodge. He's like, death to all Asgardians! And Balder's like, Sligenbeer, hear me! You cannot defeat me, but I can easily best you. Yield, and I shall be merciful. And he slashes Sligenbeer's leg with a schnisk, and Sligenbeer's like, arg! Your death will be a slow one for that. I'll grind your limbs to powder while my captives watch. And in the end, your blood will nourish another red flower on the pathway to death, Asgardian wretch. But Balder sticks his leg out, and he trips Sligenbeer, and he crashes through the wall and falls all the way down. He's like, grrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr I'm sorry. I did not seek thy life, but the fates have decreed otherwise. It was said long ago, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. But what of the captives still bound in their turret of stone? Courage, damsels. A moment and you shall all be free. And he comes up to the tower where the ladies are tied. And they're like,
Gertha, look! Balder has slain Slagenbeer. Our deliverance is at hand.
It cannot be. This dream is too sweet. The troll plays us yet another trick.
I am no phantom, my ladies. And when these bonds are broken, thou shalt taste freedom and know the dream is real.
Let us touch thee, warrior, and prove to our doubting eyes that what you say is true. Many a bitter year have my sisters and I languished here, while valiant heroes tried to save us from our plight.
He's real, Kasi. This hero is flesh and blood.
Then come inside, Balder, for our tormentor is long last dead, and we would give our savior his reward.
And so he goes into the throne room, and yeah, he's got a big old throne here to sit on, and the women are surrounding him and serving him, you know, as they do.
The coming of Slagenbeer changed everything. He slew our father and laid waste to the lands, finally cutting the castle free to roam and pillage at his pleasure.
And we were the bait that he used whenever he chose. But what of you, our savior? Yes, tell us of yourself, as you accept these tokens of our favor and gratitude.
You called yourself Balder, but are you really he whom the stories tell?
Balder the Brave, I am called by those who...
Do you have a lady, Balder?
I love a queen who I have lately left. Carnilla is her name, and she is ever in my... And they're interrupting him and saying...
And where are you from, brave Balder?
The Golden Realm of Asgard. There is my hall, and my... And she is, putting on a necklace and a belt onto him, and... I must return, for I am called on an errand of great urgency.
We would not seem so ungrateful as to let you leave in such haste.
Especially when we have yet to reward you for your courage and daring. But tell us again, who you are, and who is your lady, and where is your home?
Surely you have not already forgotten, ladies. Why, I am... How very odd. I can't remember, yeah. So, obviously, this belt and the necklace and stuff they put on him had some sort of magic effect.
Then lie back, dearest one, and we shall tell thee who thou art, and whoever you shall be. For thou art Anar, our lord and master.
We are your lovers, and live only to please you. And his castle has always been your home.
And so he's like,
Dearest Anar, why the sorry frown?
Have you not your days and nights been filled with joy? Tell us, darling, that we may soothe thy clouded brow.
Balder notices the ring on his finger with the K on it, which is Carnilla's ring that she gave him.
It's like, this ring, it disturbs me. I feel I should remember it somehow, and yet I cannot.
Then away with it, Anar. Surely such a simple bauble is of no concern to you or to us.
And they throw the ring out the window, and that cuts back to Thor. So this is sort of like a recap of what's gone on before, and Thor's there on his horse and has not quite seen the glimmer in the grass yet. And we see that Loki, and he's wearing a different costume now, and Lorelei are watching through the cosmic voyeuroscope.
And Loki's kind of narrating here.
So the past is now the present again, Lorelei. I fear that the hidden watcher in the dark, Aglitha, has not yet done her work well enough. For Baldur is still alive, and she may live to regret that. But Malekith has undone my plots, and Baldur's life or death no longer matters to me. Now Thor is about to find Baldur's prison. This should prove to be very amusing.
And Thor is basically back where we left him, and he sees the glimmer in the grass, and he picks it up, and he realizes that this is an emerald ring, and it has the initial K on it. So Thor quite implausibly figures out that this actually came from Carnilla, and only Baldur would have been carrying such a ring. So apparently there's nobody else in all of Asgard who would have a ring with the letter K on it. And Thor is thinking that he dismissed the castle too lightly. And he says he's feeling drained from having used the Belt of Strength on Earth. Remember what they said, it takes him a while to recover from wearing that. But he decides to go investigate the castle anyway, and whirls his hammer about and goes flying up to the castle. And he lands and there's no sound. And yeah, this is the same as what Baldur encountered when he was there. But he points out that the castle courtyard seems real enough, and the flagstones beneath his feet are solid, and he thinks that the air of menace seems almost palpable. So Thor's going in, but he's on his guard, and he's wondering what evil force waits for him inside. I'll wager that behind the great gate, some maleficent force waits for the unwary. But Thor has spent a great deal of time among illusions lately, and no simple conjuring trick will suffice to deflect my purpose now. And he opens the door, and he says, "By the beard of my father!" And he sees the three women, and they're in different clothes. Actually, the dark-haired woman is dressed exactly like Cersei from the Turtles. But they're all wearing different costumes now. And she's like,
"Welcome, noble stranger, to the castle in the sky.
Few indeed are so venturesome as to pass through the great gate,
that those who do may enter to enjoy whatever delights they may find within."
And we have the next issue blurb, 3 Charms for Death. And we're promised the next issue, Thor and Baldur gonna fight. All right, so that is Thor number 368. All right, so considering that this is the first issue that we have, you know, Sal Buscema on the regular art for this, the art's pretty good, I have to say. It is well done. I mean, it's not as good as the Walt Simonson stuff that we're used to, but it's better than anything we saw in the Baldur the Brave mini, which is, you know, very welcome. Now, one thing I will say for Sal Buscema is he really does know how to draw a troll. You really do get a good sense of the menace and the strength of this thing. And there is some good action going on in this. It definitely seems with this issue that Sal Buscema is really bringing his A game to the story. So even though I'm not a big fan of Sal Buscema in general, I think he did a pretty good job on the art this time around. Story-wise, I rather like it as well, because here we have Walt Simonson doing a very sort of fairy tale-ish plot, and I would go so far as to say that it's a very Norse myth-ish plot, where you actually have almost identical events happening to several different people. And that repetition is definitely something that we'll be seeing as we progress through the Norse myths, and something that we'll be seeing more and more as we cover more and more of them on the show. So it's really nice to see Simonson using that device. And I think that, obviously, Sal Buscema's art is really suited to a different style of story than perhaps the stuff that Simonson himself is telling. And I think that we're going to start noticing that shift in the stories as we go on and on. For example, we're going to have some Earth-based stories coming pretty soon, and basically supervillain stories, which is something we really haven't seen much of during the Simonson run. But that's something where Walt Simonson, I think, realized that Sal Buscema actually had some strength. This is something he's had more experience with, perhaps an area where Buscema is a little bit more comfortable with his art. So anyway, that is the issue, and with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and of course, if you want to contact the show, please feel free to do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And once again, if you would like to put together, like, maybe, you know, new opening sequence, or maybe a banner to put on the Comics Podcast Network site when we post the show, any kind of contribution that you'd care to make to the show. You know, all those things are greatly appreciated. And of course, I am willing to show my appreciation however I can. And like I said, that could be a sketch or a co-hosting gig on the show or, you know, who knows? I mean, just tell me what you want and maybe I'll be able to provide it. Keep it clean, folks. Keep it clean. I'm in a relationship. Like anyone would want that. Anyway, so thanks very much for listening. And as always, we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.